Hey, listen up.
Yeah, we here and we locked in. Let's keep it going all the way to the top 10. We fear the turtle, so it's no other option. Fred and Ryan, just watch them. Let's take it to the max.
It's the Shell and Tell.
They come with all the facts.
It's the Shell and Tell.
Let's take it to the max.
It's the Shell and Tell.
They come with all the facts.
It's the Shell and Tell.
What's up, Turf fans? Welcome back to another edition of the Shell and Tell podcast. It's been a few weeks since we've turned on the mics as we enjoyed the bye week along with the Terps football squad too. As they come back this week, we're going to catch you up on the bowl clinching win over Northwestern and take a look forward to this week's showdown with the Badgers.
Yeah, we're going to talk about possible bowl situations, where we want to go, what people we might want to see, and what a 7 or 8 win season would really mean for these Terps.
Yeah, and we'll kick off the basketball preview with Kevin Willard era beginning next week. A lot to look over, a lot of new faces with some new faces returning, so we'll take a dive in.
4 days from today, fellas, is tip-off. It's hard to believe.
Yeah, it really is. Before we get started with this week's show, today's episode is sponsored by Inside the Black and Gold. Inside the Black and Gold is your trusted source for the latest news buzz around all of Maryland athletics, with deep dives into our recruiting world for our revenue programs. Are you looking for the healthiest Maryland forums on the net? Look no further than Inside the Black and Gold. Founder and lead writer Ahmed Ghafir, formerly of 247 and Sports Illustrated, in my opinion, has been one of the top people for the Terps for years. And with the new site, he is really your go-to for everything going on in College Park. Make sure if you're not already a subscriber that you get with IBG subscription. And if you are, pass along to the Terp fans that you know. To get a deeper look at IBG recruiting news, be sure to check out Inside the Bag with our man Ahmed and Mason Viner of Young Terps on YouTube.
All right, guys. Terps now sit 6-2 overall in the season, 3-2 in the Big Ten, winning what I classify as a by any means necessary game over Northwestern, 31-24. It wasn't easy. It wasn't pretty at times, but they got the win and are now officially bowl eligible, which we'll talk about in a bit.
Yeah, it was not pretty for large parts of that game, but it was definitely the Vernon Hemby show, being able to kind of get Maryland over the hump in the fourth quarter there. But lots to kind of go over there.
Yeah, that morning was not pretty for me in any way, shape, or form. We started that day thinking we're going to have a blast, man. We got down there early, decided to go to the Big Ten kickoff show.
Yeah.
Just Fred, I, another one of his friends up there. Check that out. Then went down tailgating with the family for another couple hours, thinking we're good to go. First of all, I was really disappointed in the turnout for the Big Ten kickoff. I don't know how you feel about it, Fred.
No, it was pretty disappointing, especially when I know the Big Ten show's not quite College Game Day, or it's not the, you know, big noon kickoff. I understand that, but what would you say? There was maybe a 50 to 75 people there? I mean, fan-wise?
I mean, I'll give it 80 total, but they weren't all there at the same time. People would step in, people would leave.
Yeah. I mean, the show that they put on, like, you know,
was a good show.
Sean Merriman was there. It was cool to see him and Percy. Looks like he still's got a few plays left in him in the tank.
Yeah, he could definitely
for sure
continue to throw those pads on.
But I mean, overall, the experience was cool. I mean, I don't even think there were enough people there, though, to collect all the free t-shirts that they were giving out.
No,
that's how bad it was.
And then on top of that, just like, no energy. I mean, they only yelled for the 30 seconds of like triggering you to yell, and then everybody was just kind of standing around. I was already in a bad headspace after that, just going, really? Like, this is today's students and what's going on here? And then we tailgate. We had a great time tailgating, I must say. It cleared my head. Lot 4B had it going on. Got some shot 30s in with our boys.
Quite a few.
But I walked into the stadium, and I saw that my prediction was right, that they had changed quarterbacks on the bye week. And I immediately felt terrible. I was like, this is not going to go well. And then on the field, product was not showing me anything. Fred was slapping me like, get your head out of your ass. I'm like, not until the team takes it out of my ass.
Well, I mean, and rightfully so. I mean, we're at the second quarter. It's 17-7. The Terps are trailing, man. The offense just looks stagnant. Couldn't get anything going. But it, you know, once that second half started rolling around, that's when things started to kick in gear. Billy
our
Edwards.
Rally caps on.
Yeah. Billy Edwards obviously getting his first start in this game. It was what I guess I expected. It was more of, hey, I'll be a game manager and I'll extend the drives. I'll get first downs with my legs when I need to. They didn't really ask a whole lot of him throwing the ball, but he didn't turn the ball over. So he did what he was expected to do. And again, any means necessary, get us a win. They were able to do it.
Yeah, I mean, exactly that. I mean, they started out with, I think, two or three empty possessions. Again, they didn't really ask anything crazy of Billy. And I thought it was pretty evident that kind of in that second half, he was able to settle in a little bit more. And like you said, he was able to use his legs a little bit more, a little bit of run design. I think just kind of with a change of quarterback, it's understandable, natural for, offense to need a drive or two to kind of just gel together.
Right.
Plus, they're going up against a Pat Fitzgerald-led Northwestern team who's, known to be very good defensively. Now, that hasn't exactly shown so far this year. But, I just thought the second half, once they kind of figured out, what the blueprint to a win looked like, they kind of rode it, and that was kind of it.
Yeah. And like you said, Ryan, I mean, the change at quarterback, like you kind of predicted.
He was unstoppable, it seemed.
Yeah, I wouldn't say he was unstoppable.
On the ground, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
We had him dead to rights in the backfield a lot with turning to 15-yard gains.
100%. I mean, to avoid the pressure the way he did, extending drives with his legs, he looked good, and he's definitely, in my opinion, going to be the quarterback of the future for that squad. If they want to win games, he's definitely their better option. At least that's the way it looked like to me. But obviously, we're going to just go over this real quick. I do want to give out game balls for this. Obviously, we're 2 weeks away from it now, but
Not a full breakdown, but save some game dolls, balls and some shovels, maybe.
Yeah. So my game ball is going to be the obvious one. I mean, the MVP in this game, Roman Hemby. 179 yards, 3 touchdowns, including the 75-yarder late to seal the game. This guy continues to get it done, averaging over 7.5 yards per carry, I think, on the year right now. I mean, we talk about it every week. He just continues to get better as the season goes on, and you can see that confidence building week in and week out.
Yeah, I mean, he's been a special product, and I think it was after the Northwestern game, he led all FBS freshmen in all-purpose yards, and I think because of the bye last week, and then Ole Miss playing, their running back is now the leader again. But we talked about it plenty of times already with Hemby, but the top-end speed that the staff loved out of high school and that he's kind of shown glimpses of early on in the year, I mean, it was on full display, and that 75-yard touchdown run was quite a beauty to that response to a tie game there.
Yeah, definitely was. I think that my game ball would probably go to Edwards, really. I think that Edwards got the job done. He did not look great in the first half, but that could have really shook him. He could have not put it together. He could have been just lost, and he really started doing what he was good at and then got the job done anyway. He was able to push the ball down field. We did have some receivers with some pretty good days by the second half, but he was able to get comfortable. I didn't like the game plan for him. I thought that was part of the problem at the beginning. You know me, I've bitched about it before. I wish we could delete the swing passes from the offense altogether. I just think that there's so many more things that can go wrong than can go right. And that's basically all it was, the first two or three drives, which supposedly is easy passes to get completions. But I just think 5-yard slants are also easy passes to get completions that can have much less traumatic, issues if they go wrong. So that's just my own take on that. I think he did everything we could ask for him. We got a win with Leah on the sideline. And when we started this season, I don't think anyone thought that was going to happen. And really, we got two from him. He won the Indiana game for us, and he did win this game.
Yeah.
Whether, he accomplished what he needed to accomplish. So that would be my game ball. Huge. I'm glad we have Leah back, but I also feel so much more confident now.
That's what I was going to say.
That we have that fallback plan that we were not sure we had.
Yeah, you never want to test the waters unless you absolutely have to. Well, in this situation, we had to, and I feel a lot more confident with that backup quarterback position now, knowing what we have. Ahmed, who's your game ball go to?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I would like to just, you know, go on record. Fred, you did pick Hemby, and in a, you know, perfect world, I would also pick Hemby. It's just hard.
Of course.
To,
he's a monster. Not.
Of course.
But I'll go with Rakeem Jarrett, because I think, and I think Rack the last couple of weeks, really since the Michigan game, he's kind of had some trouble with drops. And they're kind of uncharacteristic. What I do think that Rack doesn't really get the credit for is him as a blocking wide receiver, especially downfield. He's been able to really be an asset in that regard. But again, you know, being able to finish with 8 catches for 82 yards, a touchdown, with the 1 touchdown, helping push Maryland ahead temporarily at the time. But I just think that was kind of maybe the confidence booster that maybe he needed to go into this latter half of the season. And obviously, like we mentioned, with Talia back, to be able to kind of tap into that rapport, again, that chemistry there. Hopefully he's able to kind of take it to the next level. You know, Rex kind of always been, you know, coming into College Park 3 years and then I'm going to the NFL. This is his third year and he's got a couple of regular season games left, so I think that was kind of the performance needed. So we'll see how he comes out, but that definitely stuck out to me.
Hopefully he shook that jinx, because I swear when he opened his mouth at Michigan and basically made it clear this is my last year in College Park, ever since then it's been like, yeah, what's going on? We got drops, we got low games, we got, you know, kind of shutouts. I'm like, oh, I think maybe you shouldn't have said that out loud. But yeah, he really went. And if we're going to talk about blocking receivers downfield, I do want to give a shout out to Deshaun Jones. It's been way better in that. He's not getting these peel back block penalties like he was getting.
Yep.
And he was the lead blocker on that 75 yard run, I believe.
Yeah. And, you know, defensively, it wasn't the greatest showing of the year, but I do want to give a shout out to Bo Braid. Bo Braid, I mean, he's just been the most consistent defender all year long. He leads the team in tackles, but he obviously had the big game sealing interception after the Hemby score as well. So if we're going to go defensive, he's the honorable mention for me as far as game
ball. He's starting to catch the ball. That's so big. This man's been getting his hands on the ball for years, but now he's catching the ball.
Years? He hasn't been around that long. Good one.
I would say he's had lots of pass defended, but he has been brick hands. So it's really good to see him start catching balls.
For sure. For sure. Well, I think overall, if you're going to take anything away from this game, I think the thing that we learned the most is probably, are we a little bit more comfortable with the depth on this team now at this point than we thought we were at the beginning of the year?
Yeah. I mean, we didn't even talk about defense. Defense was out everybody for this game. We were down like, what, 4 linebackers and 3 defensive backs, something like that. And we were able to get a win with that. So, I mean, we talk about, you know, losing a quarterback, which is the biggest thing, but we were down an awful lot of talented players that I'm hoping Ahmed will tell us later are coming back for this next game.
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, you know, and this wasn't really injury related, but Colton Deary drawing his first career start. Mason Lunsford came in midway through the second quarter. I think it was Spencer Anderson was in at left guard. Jahari Branch was in at right guard. So, I mean, it was just, you know, just, again, you know, the rotations obviously are one thing, but yeah, I think this was the game, especially with that linebacker. Ahmad McCullough was a guy that played really well. Jeremy Spraggins actually ended up finishing with the team high, I believe it was 8 tackles in that game, which isn't something that we know it's really seen much of this year. Spraggins, you know, getting a lot of playing time, especially with Jayshon Barham, the way he's playing. So yeah, I think it's justified, especially being able to kind of lean on that depth. Glenn Miller was another guy who came back, ended up logging 22 snaps, and that was a guy he missed about 4 or 5 weeks there with upper body injury. He heard it was pretty bad. So yeah, I think it's completely, you know, warranted to kind of have a performance like that and you know, get some of these key contributors like Jayshon Barham, Ruben Hippolyte back this upcoming week. But yeah, I think it's a testament to the coaching staff.
And before we move on from this game, the one last thing that I got to get off my chest, you know, I know we didn't want to go too deep on this, but I was just so disappointed in the game or in the play calling in the goal line situations. We never went to goal line. I know we lost Antoine Littleton, but Hemby can be your goal line back if you need be. You can still go heavy package. You still have a fullback. You can go under center. So see what happened in that game on multiple occasions, but the biggest one being the shotgun snap on whatever it was, third and one or whatever down in the goal, in the red zone, where it went over his head and then another sack and you're out of field goal range. Like, that was just a mind-blowing, you know, system of events, like both those things. And then The other one was the false start on the total opposite side of the field when it was like third and one and they didn't go under center. And I'm yelling, what are they doing? Why are they not running the ball? Why don't they have the heavy package in here on the 5 yard line where you can get a first down and a yard and they got a false start? And it's like, what are you guys doing? So, I mean, I don't know. It really was part of one of the parts in the game where I'm just like, we're trying to lose this.
Yeah, I don't say that they're trying to lose it, but yeah, I definitely understand
as a fan.
Yeah, I understand the frustrations, and that's been year round. Like there, even when we did have Littleton, there have been times where we're not using him, or like that time where we used Littleton after a 65-yard run four times. You know what I mean? There's been a lot of questionable decisions in the goal line, so it's definitely continued to be an issue. Hopefully, that gets corrected, but. Listen, this was a big win, man. This was it was a critical win because now the team has secured bowl eligibility with the
little stress off the back.
Yeah, a little stress off the back, but we got four games left to play, right? So doesn't need to end here at six. We can get that seventh, eighth, ninth win, whatever we want, whatever we can finish with. But it's significant because it's the earliest a bowl game was secured since 2001, man. That's a long time.
That's a real long time. That's like year one for Ryan sitting in the stands.
That's the first year of Maryland football that I remember. I was what, 8, 9 years old at that point.
So. I was putting on snowplows.
Yeah. Oh man, Fred was collecting retirement checks. Yeah, in 2001. Right.
But yeah, obviously, you know, like I said, you know, you talked about, you know, recruiting, you know, ever since I covered it, you know, you always say, you know, win and you know, you'll be able to kind of get the local talent and whatnot. And yeah, you know, Maryland's kind of has that chance to win consecutive bowl games for the first time in almost 10 years too. So I think it's, you know, just keep kind of stacking these performances. And again, it kind of goes back to what Loxie said last year, you know, getting to a bowl game isn't the standard, but getting to that bowl game helps set the standard. So at this point,
it's the first check. You got more checks, but six is your first check every year. Like that's where you're, you know, of course, these guys are going to come in and say, yeah, we're going to win the Big Ten. But first, in order to win the Big Ten, you have to win six games.
Right.
That's your first step.
So I wanted to get your guys' take, right? We're at six wins now, which is what we finished in the regular season last year. We got four games to go. We talked about two pretty potentially winnable games, one very winnable, and maybe a third winnable game, right? What would a 7 or 8 win regular season mean for this program in year four for Coach Lox?
Yeah, I mean, if you can get 8 wins, and I was telling a buddy earlier this week about it, I feel like mentally a win at Wisconsin is, it's a validating win because it's a, you know, it's a classic Big Ten environment. It's still at Wisconsin, and even though, you know, it's, you know, they've been playing better as of late, but it's still a down year from a Wisconsin standpoint. So I think that, you know, if they're able to get a win like that, or, you know, if they can get 8 wins and that 8th win includes at Penn State.
Yeah,
you're getting, I think the biggest upside is I think that Maryland fans, they recognize that, yeah, this is a good team. They want to see that next level. But from a national perspective, you're talking about a lot more respect. You're talking about people that are, you know, looking at Maryland, and they have to truly evaluate it. Even going into this year, you saw a lot of people that would, you know, just kind of glance over and say, oh, well, you know, they're in the Big Ten East, you know, they got to play Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State. Oh, it's so tough. And the people that dove in, you know, they said, well, don't sleep on this Maryland team. So I think an 8th win, and if it includes an at Wisconsin, at Penn State, it gives some more juice to the Maryland brand nationally.
I 100% agree with you. I mean, you figure unless there's a catastrophic ending to the season, you should get your 7th win versus Rutgers. That should be a given, right?
Yeah.
So that 8th win is either going to come across Penn State, Ohio State, or Wisconsin. And I think any three of those, obviously Wisconsin being on the lower tier, but any three of those you can hang your hat on as a program changing win, because again, getting to that 8th win puts you up in the upper echelon of teams, right? Just again, in year four for Lox, like, I know that there's people that question a lot of things about the way he, you know, manages a game and what his coaching has been historically as a head coach. What you have to be able to compartmentalize that and put all that aside and say, what has he done since he's been here, since he's been back as a head coach? And again, getting to an 8-win season, man, it's just the program is going, in my opinion, not just in the right direction, but above and beyond this fast, in my opinion, to 8 wins.
And And I said at Wisconsin, at Penn State, and I'd also like to just, you know, add to that, if that eighth win is a home win against Ohio State, number two in the country, yeah,
it is
just as validating as the other
two. I'm fine with that. That's, we have to settle.
I need the three, win. I guess. Yeah. So, yeah, it would be huge. It would be huge. And I think that, you know, again, that's kind of why securing that bowl eligibility before the bye kind of helped. You know, it was that first stepping stone. So we'll see. Big 4 weeks for him coming up, though.
For sure.
And I was telling Fred, like, I this whole year I have been like, I think Penn State's winnable and Ohio State's just not. They're just so great. That Ohio State Penn State game confused my brain. Like, they were way too close. Like, I told my wife, I was like, well, let me watch this first quarter. They'll be down by 21 and we can leave. And I'm like, holy crap, Penn State's winning at half. Like, how is this happening right now? So I don't know if Ohio State just had a down week. I don't know if Ohio State's not as good as we thought. I don't know if Penn State's better than we thought. I'm no longer have any grasp over this situation.
To answer, in my opinion, I think Penn State's better than we give them credit defensively. Where Ohio State is different from any other team that we're going to play this year. Every team that we're going to play this year has one asset on the offensive side that they're good at. They're either good at throwing the ball or they're good at running the ball. No team is built balanced other than Ohio State. Ohio State can pick you apart any which way. They can run it down your throat or they can throw it over your heads. You know, they've got a laundry list of wide receivers.
Marvin Harrison Jr. is great. That's all I know.
yeah, and he was fourth on the depth chart when the season started. Like, that's how monster. Crazy how deep they are. Ohio State's a very, very good team. I agree with you that, you know, they didn't play up to par against Penn State.
They had
State.
A bad week.
It was a bad week, but listen, if that eighth win comes against Ohio State, I am going to be real, real happy with this team's progress for sure.
It'd be pretty nice to see a Maryland win at home like that, and then some Maryland fans get a chance to storm the field. I think that'd be especially in year four. So, but yeah,
we're 17 of us will be on that field.
Yeah. I think we've gotten the hopes up of a couple listeners so far. So I think we're on the right path. So far.
I'm definitely gonna get some texts or direct messages like, "How dare you make me hope?"
Well, early projections right now have the Terps on the path of potentially the Duke's Mayo Bowl. Against North Carolina State in Charlotte.
Prestigious.
In Charlotte, which we were already at one point this year. Or the Music City Bowl versus Kentucky or South Carolina in Nashville. You guys have any preference on bowl destination? Like, obviously for me, I don't want to go back to Charlotte. If I don't have to, I will. But I prefer Nashville. Never been. I've always heard good things and would love to go check out the town.
Yeah, my two best friends live in Nashville, so I've you know, if that happens, definitely make a week out of it. It's really, really fun city, atmosphere, everything is great. Plus, if it's Maryland, South Carolina, Nashville, Tennessee, that would be definitely get the juices pumping. That's for sure.
Yeah,
I'm good with that. So that's I'll rank these for you. I'll take Music City against South Carolina. Then I'll take Duke's Mayo versus NC State for the old ACC rivalry.
Okay.
And then I'll take Music City against Kentucky. Music City against Kentucky in Nashville doesn't really get me going all that much. I've been to Nashville. I'm not quite as big a fan as Ahmed is. It's got a really cool street. It's got one street that's pretty cool. But the rest of it, eh. But yeah, I think that's where it is. I do want to stick it to South Carolina. I would definitely be all in. I will be so sad
Could
if we lose against South
imagine
Carolina.
Imagine going against South Carolina and Barham going off for like four sacks or something in that the game.
The recruiting implications for South Carolina, Maryland would be insane.
100%.
It would be one of the biggest games in Lockley's career to have to play against South Carolina in a bowl game.
They would be fired up.
It could
fired
change up. Everything.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. I just think it would be really cool. And, you know, just like I obviously, you know, we're talking about football and whatnot, but even if you look outside of sports, especially in Montgomery County, there is a large portion of the DMV that we're not a large portion, but considering, you know, what schools they go to out of state, there's a sizable portion that goes to South Carolina. So I think it would kind of be just, you know, kind of again, just kind of add some more juice to it. I think it'd be that. Not even close. It's my preferred destination.
But I'm still planning on 9 wins and going to a Florida bowl game. So I don't know why we're talking about this.
I mean, at the end of the day, I was telling buddies, I was just like, I just want somewhere warm. you know.
Right.
New York was cool last year. Yankee Stadium, the food was great, the amenities and all.
We'll go back to New York a couple years from now when we're all down here.
Yeah. So I think, you know, I think that's kind of the thing. But yeah, I just think, you know, Nashville is I think it'd be a fun spot for Browns fans. So.
I was sad to see the Vegas Bowl isn't an option this year. That's not a Big Ten one. Damn it's in every other Big Ten. I was real sad.
I was hoping to get another Vegas trip.
Like, let's milk a Vegas trip out of this.
Right.
Well, the path to 7, 8, or 9 wins continues this weekend as they face Wisconsin on the road. Also, a team coming fresh off their bye week, coming off a win versus Purdue, 35-24. Wisconsin's been kind of an up and down team this year. You know, at the beginning of the year, I think there was a lot of hype behind them. Then things kind of tallied off, but then they come up with a big win versus Purdue. I don't know. I don't really know what to think about this team. And
it's got an awful lot better with a new coach somehow.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, obviously, health is going to play a big factor in this game. Getting Leah back at QB1 makes me feel a lot more confident. We heard Locks make that announcement earlier this week that he will be playing Saturday, so he's only missed the one game, thank gosh. But how about you give us a little bit of an update on linebacker and just the depth overall? Littleton, everybody.
Yeah. Someone asked me earlier about Littleton. I expect that he's okay. Loxley hasn't addressed it. He did announce on Thursday that Ruben Hippolyte, Jayshon Barham are both back. He didn't mention Cowan, but again, that's another guy that's expected back. Gavin Gibson, I know he was another guy that was kind of battling back from upper body injury as well. So he's another candidate to come back. So again, you know, the bye week did help. And it was expected that Talia would come back this weekend. I posted on the site. Definitely did not expect Loxie to be so transparent about it.
Yeah, very blunt and just straight to the point.
And yeah, flippant, like three words.
Yeah,
what he's
yeah
playing. What are we yeah talking about?
Yeah, yeah. It was just like, yeah. What more do you want me to say? And we were like, well, a little bit more.
A little bit, like anything. It was it was the most Nick Saban thing I've ever seen him do.
Yeah, yeah. It's been interesting covering injuries this year, that's for sure. But yeah, the depth should be back a little bit more this upcoming week. A couple guys, again, you know, they're just kind of playing through injuries sustained through the course of the season. You know, there are definitely guys that are banged up that you know, off season wise could get surgery, you know, rehab time, things like that. But you're just at that point in the season. But again, the bye week can't be overstated enough how crucial of a time it came in order to give the some of these key players extra time to just rest and less wear and tear.
So should we be full strength in the linebacker room? We're getting We're getting Barham and Hippolyte back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Loxley announced that. So yeah, I mean, both of those guys, huge guys. Yeah. And he didn't mention Cowan, but again, that he is expected back. So yeah. So we shall see.
Yeah, I heard Littleton was practicing, but in a big old knee brace. So that's a new development there. But, you know, people are playing in these knee braces every week now. Leo will still have his on. So we'll see what that means.
Yeah, that's very true.
All right. So looking at how these teams kind of rank against each other, Wisconsin comes in as a pretty balanced team. They're not great on offense. They're not horrible. They're not great on defense. They're not horrible. I think the thing that stands out the most, they're just above us. And when I say they're just above us, they're literally a tick above us in rush offense at 171.5 yards a game. We're at 171.4 at sixth. So they're obviously going to run the ball offensively through the air. They're 10th in the Big Ten, 218 yards. Is there anybody on this team? Again, we always talk about having that one player that stands out, that one guy we don't want to let beat us. Is there anybody on this team that worries you individually?
I mean, I think Braylon Allen, the running back, I think he's going to be the big focal point. He's obviously the leading rusher, fourth in the Big Ten, averages just shy of 109 yards per game. And he's one of four players with 100 receiving yards so far this year. So, you know, I think just a preparation standpoint, I think Maryland, what I expect them to do is just kind of have Braid in the box kind of as a, you know, extra linebacker, have Dante Trader over the top. The Badgers do have another wide receiver, Chimari Dyke. He's a 6'1", 6'2" wide receiver. So you get Braid inside the box, have Dante Trader kind of spying over top. And I think that Maryland, you know, with the news that Jayshon and Ruben Hippolyte are back, I think Maryland has enough firepower and the rotation to kind of control the front seven in that sense. So, but Braylon Allen is definitely the guy that makes that offense go.
got to shut them down. We cannot have another Michigan where one player roll for 200 and end our day. So that'd be good to get him out of there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, wanted to kind of gauge your guys' thoughts on this game. You know, obviously, Leah's coming back. So is his knee 100%? No. What kind of game plan do you think would be the right approach for this team? I mean, do you think that, listen, we've obviously committed to the run a lot lately, especially last week with, you know, Leah being out. You've got a back like Roman Hemby. If Littleton's back, you've got your 1-2 duo there. Do you commit more onto the ground just to see how Leah is and kind of work him in to the passing game as the game goes on? Or do you go back to guns blazing through the air?
I think you go back right to where you were. I think the biggest thing though will be Nick Herbig, the Wisconsin linebacker, who's really good linebacker. I mean, we talked about Jacoby Wineman a couple weeks ago before he decided to punch people in a tunnel, but that's neither here nor there. But Herbig leads a Big Ten in tackles for loss and sacks. And he could pose some questions in terms of, or some problems, excuse me, in terms of Maryland's protection. So I'm curious to see how Maryland does in that regard, especially with Talia coming back, whether, you know, it's a lot more quick reads, you know, get Hemby out in space early, things like that. I don't know if Maryland will be able to do that, but it'll be a test for the offensive line, maybe Jalen Duncan there. But yeah, I mean, if you're Maryland, maybe you want to place an earlier emphasis on running the ball in order to take the crowd out of the game. You know, obviously Wisconsin's gonna be a tough place to play, but from a preparation standpoint after that, I think Maryland should just go back to what they do. They just have too many weapons on offense in that receiver room for Wisconsin to stop them all day.
Yeah, sounds like you need a little bit of help from CJ Dupree or even an Olsen Fontaine to contain a linebacker like that. Might have a little bit of more of 12 personnel on that. So we'll see. Hopefully we can still get to our weapons. I think that we can attack this defense through the air, and I think that will open up. Hemby can have another huge day, even without, you know, being the focal point with 20 some carries. So you're talking about eighth in both passing and rushing defense on their side of the ball. That's not very intimidating. We should be able to be worth us being third in scoring offense. That doesn't seem like a matchup that's going to be all that scary. So get it. We talked before. Fred almost nailed it with the two touchdowns for Dante Demas. We now have a bye week between here and there. I would love to see this week really getting healthy and see our wide receivers what we thought they were, because so far we've been pleasantly surprised with the running backs and just like a little bit pessimistically disappointed. They've been good, but just not the world beaters that we thought they were going to be. So I'd like to see that us getting healthy can make that happen.
All right. Well, Ahmed, I'll let you kick this week's predictions for the game. How do you see this shaking out? Do you think it's a win for Terps?
I have 31-27 Maryland, and I really got to that because I, you know, just kind of look at the matchups. You know, Maryland's offense against Wisconsin defense. I think Maryland's offense against Wisconsin defense can be more efficient, has the better potential for big plays and finding the end zone, efficiency in the red zone. I don't think that Wisconsin has the firepower, and I think that Maryland has the talent to stop Braylon Allen making Graham Mertz beat them. And I think if Maryland's making Graham Mertz beat them, the secondary, you know, they've definitely had some, you know, hot and cold moments at times this year, but I think they'll be able to stifle the Badgers in that regard. The only thing that gives me pause is that, again, this is at Wisconsin, and just like Maryland, Wisconsin is also coming off a bye and a win against Purdue. So I do think that Maryland has the talent, and I do think that Maryland is capable of coming out on top. But regardless, I think even if Wisconsin does pull it out, I definitely do think it'll be a one possession game. But I will stick with 31-27 Dirty Terps.
All right. I like it. Ryan, what do you got happening?
All right. Well, as always, I always talk about the ESPN marker here. They got Wisconsin at 60.7% to win. They have us at 5-point underdogs with over under at 49. I think 49 is kind of crazy. I think this is definitely going over on that.
I agree.
I think that's the biggest lock on this game. I might not bet anything else about this game, but I think it's going over. I can see us pulling this out. I feel like it's a lot like the Purdue game. And we all sit here and know we lost the Purdue game, but none of us feel like we should have. We had 3 turnovers that we took from them for 0 points. That doesn't make any sense in a one possession game. You should have won that. I think we fixed that problem in this. We get the points off some turnovers. We get this going. I got us getting win number 7 in Camp Randall at Wisconsin. I'm finally on the Fred train. You all know I wasn't there at the beginning of the year. I was winning in Michigan and losing in Wisconsin, but I'm in. I think that we can win this. Let's call it 35-24. Yeah, I'm going. Blowout. 35-24. Let's go. Let's go.
The ultimate optimist. I love it.
I'm gonna have to run that back to hear the logic that led up to 11-point win.
How did we get Madison, here? But
started turnovers. Three turnovers back to back.
I don't know how we got there.
We're getting these three turnovers. Don't worry about it.
All right. Well, like you said, I've said it all year. I thought this was a game that the Terps could win even in the beginning of the year, and I haven't changed my thought process at all. If anything, I've kind of strengthened that. So I'm going to keep this simple. I think the Terps can, any day of the week, go into Wisconsin this year and win. The only way they lose this game is if they beat themselves. And that's the thing. Stay out of your own way. Don't commit the stupid penalties that have been a problem all year long. Play your game, and you should come out with a win. I'm not going to say it's going to be a blowout. I'm not going to say it's an 11-point game. Right?
Blowout, baby.
I'm going 33-30. I think it'll be a close game, a 3-point game, but I think the Terps can win this. All right, Ahmed, let's hit the recruiting trail. Any news or updates with any of the targets coming in?
Nothing, groundbreaking news or anything like that. Just with the bye week, obviously, I was after Thursday's practice last week. A lot of the coaches were able to kind of hit the road. Mentioned on the site, Coffeyville offensive lineman Keyshawn Blackstock. I actually mentioned about a week before he announced the offer that he was a name to know. He was actually previously offered in the fall. It sounds like there was some miscommunication and he didn't really realize that he had the Maryland offer. So they were like, no, you do have the offer. We want you. So he's definitely a name to know along the offensive line. His teammate, Bishop Fitzgerald, he's a safety. Maryland got a chance to check in on both of them last week. Jaden Jones, another guy who's a Florida State verbal. I mentioned on the site that I expect him to officially visit. You can sign up to see when. And Maryland also got a chance to see Derek Rogers, Dylan Wade down in Florida, also the home of four-star Miami verbal Malik Bryant, who Maryland was in the mix for. Don't really see Maryland being a huge factor there. Mike Miller was also up in Pennsylvania and got a chance to see Brandon Wazlowski. So a lot of action on some 23 guys. There's some stuff that I just can't put out publicly and whatnot. I've been able to kind of
we'll talk
hint at things, on the side.
Some big fish type stuff. I guess.
Yeah.
Somebody might be like down by the inner harbor or something.
Yeah. Actually, yeah. I mentioned that, things were starting to trend in a good direction with Harbor last week, and mentioned that initially he was going to be doing the first weekend of December, but the LSU official visit that kind of threw his, had to be rescheduled once. It was a possibility. Rescheduled again. End up getting rescheduled to the first weekend of December. So with that, Maryland gets pushed to the December 9th weekend, which possibly makes Maryland the last school to host in front of an official visit before he signs. So yeah, it would be a huge development. He's told me before Miami was kind of a school that he was thinking about taking that fifth official to, but it seems like seems like South Carolina, Michigan.
All that money doesn't seem to be working for them.
Yeah. Oh my God. How do you lose to Duke, man?
That's a lot of money put out to lose to Duke.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not a good look. So, I think that's kind of a wild card, I'd say, for now. But in my mind, it's kind of South Carolina, Michigan, Maryland. Looked like a month ago, there were some pretty big rumors that Harbor could be making a local midseason change that would have definitely had some implications on his recruitment, but that did not end up happening. He got everything ironed out, so he's still at Carroll. Maryland is still definitely in the mix there. So we'll see. It's going to be an interesting next 6 weeks.
You watch those clips of like kids in high school and you got that like man amongst boys. Like, have you ever seen the Nick Chubb running track when he was in high school photo? Like, it just looks,
yeah, it looks like a 45-year-old man.
It looks absurd, right? Nicholas Harbor is that guy for me. When I watch his highlights, I look at him and I'm like, Jesus, he is just on a whole nother level versus some of these kids that he plays with. It's just, it doesn't look fair.
Yeah, I'm
huge guy to get.
I mean, he's just like, he's special. I mean, I even remember seeing last, going into like junior year, scrimmages, things like that. I mean, you can play him at receiver, you can play him at tight end, you can play him at outside backer, defensive end. Like, there's a reason he's an athlete. But I feel like what people don't realize is that, yeah, he's 6'5", he's 235 right now, and he's, I mean, from an athleticism standpoint, I mean, it's he's one in a million, truly.
Do you know what that sounds like to me? Do you remember when, well, when LeBron James was being recruited out of high school, right? He was the same type
Magic
of
Magic Johnson was.
He was that same type of build. If he wasn't so goddamn good at basketball, football wise, he was the same thing. Could have literally played anywhere on the field, and with his size or whatever, he just would have dominated on the field.
And I think with Harbor, it's really interesting because he hasn't really ever just focus on football. Like, there's always been football and track and football. When it's football off season, he's going all over the country for track. So I think it's gonna be really interesting, and that's why I mentioned on the site, you know, like with the possible transfer mid-season, that transfer was going to make it possible for him to enroll early at the school. So I thought that was going to be the biggest caveat in his recruitment. If he was able to enroll early, he could go to a school as an athlete and just, you know, just kind of work out for the first, you know, first couple weeks and then kind of go from there. But I just think, even still, like, when you look at him, it's so obvious that he's going to have an instant impact. But I think it's going to be really special just kind of watching him just continue to grow when he's dedicated, when he's in a Power 5 strength conditioning program, and, you know, he's able to kind of maintain that same speed and still add another 15-20 pounds that first year. So he's really special. And also, I mean, I got a chance to meet his dad a couple weeks ago up at Calvert Hall, and just comes from a really, really good family. I'm still very humble. He checks off all the boxes.
The definition of athlete tag. You know, when you see the ATH, he is the definition of that.
Secret time, everyone. Talking to you shell and tellers out there. Forget these guys. I've mentioned Harbert Ahmed 437 times. This is the most engagement I've seen back from him at all. So this is really good signs in my brain.
Do with that what you
will.
Don't
worry about what he says about it. But the fact he was willing to talk about it that long makes me feel really great as a Maryland fan that we're pushing in the right direction at the right time, baby. Yeah, let's go. I mean, all right, end of secret time.
No. I mean, you're 100% right. Like, I've never said that, you know, like, Maryland's out. Like, I always still feel like, you know, Maryland's in it.
But there's been some pessimism in the tone, and I'm not hearing it anymore.
No. Like, I knew at one point, like, early fall, you know, like, there were some concerns about, you know, like, how serious was Maryland chances with him. And there were just kind of, you know, some things that they had to, and South Carolina, Michigan getting those official visits, I think, you know, but those schools, South Carolina is doing a really good job recruiting him really since that July visit. I mean, they, you know, he's been able to go there before, but ever since then, you know, they've been a very prominent contender. But Maryland, you know, they're always in it. Like, I saw him, I think it was the first scrimmage. He sat out because he didn't have enough time to have practice before first scrimmage and things like that. But he was just like, you know what, like, Carroll is the same, like, me going to Carroll is the same as me going to Maryland. Like, you know, like, I'm going to help build that program up, and we go from there. And then when, you know, it's the same as Dylan Wade. You see a guy that has that kind of upside, and he's that athletic. You know, Mike Loxley has a desire to, you know, use these guys as skill players, you know, wide receiver, tight end. See a guy like Corey Dyches, you know, he moved over to tight end. So I think that, you know, Maryland has a lot of ammo to sell. What they're doing on offense makes a really big thing. Obviously, they have their early playing time, and they also point to, hey, look at, you know, how frequently we rotate our freshmen. I just think I'll never doubt Mike Loxley recruiting for the elite guys right in their backyard. It's a long cycle.
Clearly, this is an NIL athlete, so I did want to bring up one more thing real quick. This latest Under Armour commercial with Rakim Jarrett, these new speed shoes, absolute fire. I thought it was really cool. It shows kind of a real big step in the NIL possibilities for the Maryland athletes. Not only was Rakim Jarrett in there, you saw CJ Dupree, you saw some one of the volleyball players in this, and I'm sure many others that I missed and Antoine watching Littleton, in the background. Yeah, Antoine Littleton in the runs. And just to see that possibility, and, you know, the whole idea of him giving all the shoes away or the players and all that thing, it was just a really cool, like, our NIL, like, come out moment, bigger than I've seen, you know, publicly. I'm sure there's lots of things going on I don't know about, but it was the most outward show that we're heading in the right direction, that he's still willing to step up, write big checks, make this work, and gives me a little more hope there as well.
Yeah, I think you nailed it right there. I've seen a couple. I think even right before the show, I saw CJ Dupree got something with body armor as well. So it looks like, you know, NIL, whatnot. And I posted on the site last Friday was the first event for the TBIA Foundation, which is Maryland Football's NIL collective. What was it? Deshaun Jones, Rakeem Jarrett, Ahmad McCullough, and excuse me, but the other two names are slipping my mind right now. But yeah, you know, possibility that there's more events in the next couple of weeks. But yeah, you know, the NIL marketplace.
Multiple top athletes that cannot go pro this year. Of course, they can enter the transfer portal and leave us, but like some of their top talent cannot go pro. So they are in NIL deal like greatness that they have been able to show off before they can go pro. Your pro deal is the NIL right now. So there's definitely going to be some shopping this offseason for a Hemby, for a Dupree, for these guys that only have 2 years under their belt and have shown they're going to be a dude.
Right. Well, guys, while one revenue sport's halfway through its regular season, another is just days away from tipping off with Maryland basketball set to open the season on November 7th versus Niagara. We haven't talked basketball in a while, and I think it's time for us to check in, man. Like I said, we're just a few days away from tipping off. You know, preseason rankings right now, Maryland's projected to finish 10th in the Big Ten this season. Early thoughts on that? Is that where you expected them to be, high, low? Where are you guys feeling?
Yeah, I think it's justified. And I kind of look at the roster kind of similar to last year, not in regards to talent, but more so just, you know, with the new faces kind of meshing with the new, with the existing faces. And then obviously, you know, new coaching staff. There's just a lot of new pieces. And I truly do believe Willard when he said, you know, the first maybe 4 or 5 weeks are going to be ugly. And I think we're going to start to hit our groove in, you know, late December, early January, which is theoretically when you want to start, you know, kind of figuring things out and, you know, start to ascend, come, you know, the closer with to postseason play. But I, yeah, again, I think it's justified. I think Maryland kind of has to prove some things. Obviously the rotation in the front court is a, glaring concern and how well they can shoot the ball. But, so yeah, no huge objections on my end.
It could be anywhere over the place, man. Like, I just don't know what's going on with this team. I'm excited about everything I heard. I like the direction we've gone since we got Mark Turgeon out of there. I think he's brought in the right coaches. I think he's brought in a lot of the right players. It's probably too early to succeed because we saw what this team did last year. He did get to keep most of the guys, but they didn't do anything. But we did have high hopes for that team last year. So who knows? Maybe they underachieved because it was on a lame duck coaching situation. Maybe they underachieved because of all the drama that was going on around the program. So if those guys are as good as we thought they were before last season, then you could be anywhere from fifth, sixth in the league to dead last. Like, it's really hard to project it. I just want to see that what he said is true. I want to see them out there, even if it's ugly. I want to see them running. I want to see them developing shooters. I want to see, you know, Julian Reese taking that step. I want to see the development of these program and building players. And if I see that, I'm good. I also don't know that our schedule is as hard as everyone's saying it is. Yes, we have some cool out-of-conference matchups with UCLA, Tennessee. But Louisville was also supposed to be one of the big ones, and I heard they like lost a scrimmage to some Division II team or something.
With a grain of salt.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that result's definitely, you know, it's a head scratcher for sure. But, you know, I think Jeff Goodman, I think he was the one that posted it, but he was just like, look, a lot of these guys, you know, they don't really care about the score. You know, they're working rotations and some of these guys
working plays.
Yeah, and they'll work, you know, 1 through 13.
And it could be true. They could come in and be great, but I'm not going to be doomsday on this. I still have the same goals I always do for this team. I hope we scrape into the NCAA playoffs or NCAA tournament. That's my goal. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it'll happen, but that's what I want to see. Or Maryland.
And I think, you know, I think it's justified. And I think, you know, I think Maryland can exceed expectations if they can do two things this year. I think, you know, obviously the starting five, we expect them, you know, Jameer Young, Don Carey, Hakeem Hart, Julian Reese, Dante Scott. But if Maryland can find a dependable third guy in the front court, like a Patrick Chameleon, if he can come in and kind of be, you know, a reliable piece on both ends of the court, or at least on the defensive end, I think Maryland will be able to show better, more signs of life. Or, you know, again, if Julian Reese, again, if he can take that next step, but also last year he had a really big problem just fouling, and the foul trouble held him out for extended periods in key games. And if Maryland is gonna be that team. Yeah, they need to find someone aside from Julian Reese and Dante Scott in the front court. But Julian Reese needs to find a way to make sure he's staying on the court. And, you know, Maryland and Willard doesn't have to go back to the bench on the third guy, not because, you know, he doesn't think that things on the court are working, but because Julian Reese has picked up his third foul and there's still 30 minutes left in the game.
How bad do we miss Checo? Can you believe that? Like, we need just a Checo.
Yeah,
that's all we need.
Galen Smith and if, yeah. You know, Patrick Emelian. I mean, you know, Galen Smith, you know, he was a guy that he was undersized, but he was just, you know, thicker. But Patrick Emelian type, you know, he not the same type of body, not the same type of player, but just kind of the same role. I think that's kind of what Maryland needs in that front court. And I think if you can at least get that, then that can at least provide some assurances. Obviously, they signed a 7-1 freshman, Caleb Swinton Roger.
Yeah.
But he's, you know, a guy that he's going to need probably a year.
A lot of Cal Tarp.
Yeah. Like it's he's going to need the strength and conditioning to, you know, get ready, get acclimated to Big Ten style of play. So we'll see. I'm pretty excited to see Jameer Young, especially after watching a guy like Patrick Russell last year.
What do you see Noah Batchelor's role being in this? You think he's going to be able to participate immediately?
So to that point, and I want to get your feedback on this, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think that third guard, that rotational guard, is going to be crucial to this team. Like you said, more than likely, Hakeem Hart will probably play the small forward position. So does a guy like Ian Martinez or Noah Batchelor step in and step up? And because I liked Ian Martinez in doses last year, but there were definitely times where he played out of control and just got careless with the ball. That's, I think, for me, is seeing the maturity of Ian Martinez. I think if he can show improvement and play a little bit more control and really give this team a good three-guard rotation, I think that they can go a longer way.
Yeah, and I think last year, Ian Martinez at the one just did not look natural. And I think him being able to play off ball a little bit more will give him a chance to kind of capitalize on that athleticism, being able to capitalize in transition. That was where he was able to thrive in Utah, and him sliding in the two. And that's kind of why Jahari Long's addition this offseason. Obviously he will be able to relieve Jameer Young at the one. So you get a guy like Ian Martinez where he can come in. Ian, you know, he went through stretches last year where he was, you know, hot and cold shooting wise, but yeah, again, if he can, you know, especially at the rim, you know, he was able to produce some pretty athletic dunks, especially, again, like I mentioned, just in transition. But getting a guy like that to play in some position that caters and maximizes what he's good at, I think that's kind of the big thing. And we'll see. I think defensively, you know, you kind of saw some things where last year where, you know, it showed some signs, some optimism that, you know, he can kind of be a guy. So
The style of play they're promising us, we should have a lot more transition opportunities. Like, we didn't have any, like, we had 4 a game with like a breakaway steal with Turgeon for the last 10 years. So to press the ball, to run more, hopefully we'll see just more opportunities for transition points and to see some of the athleticism that they do have on this team. We do have long athletic players. We just don't have the traditional makeup.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think a guy like Noah Batchelor, I'm kind of curious to see, you know, if there's ever a chance that, you know, if he's only playing the three, I'd be kind of curious to see a non-conference play against a smaller team. I'd just kind of be curious to see if Willard ends up trotting him out as a four, if they're going to go a small ball lineup and, you know, get a guy like Noah Batchelor who shown strides and shown signs that he's able to shoot a little bit well from the perimeter, kind of help floor spacing a little bit. So that's kind of the role I see him playing in right now. So again, you know, we'll see, but definitely, especially a guy like Noah Batchelor who was so adamant, so clearly wanted to be at Maryland for him to eventually, you know, obviously get the offer from Willard and be here. I think that'll be a cool thing to see. So excited to see how he works out.
What's the latest with Ike Cornish, man? This is another kid that was highly recruited and highly thought of coming in here, but it seems like he just fallen down the depth chart. Really not. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what to expect of him this year. Is he going to have a role?
Yeah, I mean, he's another guy who can kind of play the two. I think he can play a little bit of the three, but I think primarily he's two. Okay. From what I heard last year, I mean, it sounded like he redshirted last year, where so now he's kind of back in the groove where this is like his first full season, kind of getting acclimated, things like that. I think he was good to go the last couple of weeks of last season where he's able to practice, things like that. From what I've heard, you know, the shooting has been something that he's shown signs of early on. So I think, again, he does kind of factor into the rotation. I just don't know how much just yet, but I think a guy like Ian Martinez, just again, just kind of being maybe a little bit more experienced early on. I think maybe Willard kind of leans on him, but we'll see. I think that could be a viable question to see kind of how that ends up splitting up.
Yeah, because I mean, honestly, that's what they need. They need shooters, right? And last year, a big part of the problem was Turgeon's inability to change game plans, but the 3-point shooting was atrocious, but they continue to throw up three after three after three after three. And I think getting a guy like Don Carey in here, obviously he was a very good 3-point shooter at Georgetown. Hopefully that dynamic changes with this team and that they can actually start cashing in on some of these threes, because that was something that carried the Terps for years through their success, was their 3-point shooting. And it's been a problem over the last few.
Yeah, unfortunately for me, with my Eric Ayala fan train that just never left the station, just never got to the point I ever thought that he would be. Looking for a new favorite Terp, guys. So I got a leader out here, but I don't know. I'm open for opportunities, guys. Show off for me.
There you go. But yeah, I think it'll be kind of interesting to see a guy like Jameer Young, who I think does a really good job just kind of crafting his way to the rim. And a guy like Dante Scott, Julian Reese, who have shown flashes of having the perimeter shooting, you know, high ball screens, things like that. I think that's kind of where Jameer Young can kind of help just kind of give those guys opportunities. And a guy like Don Carey, if he's on the wing, if you're able to, you know, Jameer's drawing defenders and Don Carey's in the corner, things like that. So I think Maryland does kind of have some opportunities in that regard. But I think Jameer Young kind of will end up being that catalyst, obviously, just being the point guard. But, you know, he's a true playmaker.
I know Dante Scott can shoot the three, but he does not need to be your primary 3-point shooter. He needs to use his size and his athleticism and play down low. I think that if Dante Scott is your leading 3-point shooter on your team, you've got problems.
I miss Chubby Dante. Bring him back. I like the guy that can D up, and he's number 5 in the league.
I'm not saying he shouldn't, because he's actually a pretty good shooter for a big guy. But just use that, because we lack size so much.
Is he even a big guy anymore?
Well, yeah, he's definitely a little slender version, but he's the biggest guy that we have outside of Julian.
Basketball.
Right. He's still strong. All right, so then I'm going to ask you guys, put your feet to the fire. Give me a hot take this year. Ryan, I'll let you kick this off. What's a hot take on the season?
Well, I think we'll start 3-0. I don't think Niagara is going to... No.
Not the layup.
All right. Hot take. All right, well, I'm going to go with the guy I think is going to be my favorite Terp, the one that I think could really do big things here. Saw spurts of it. I thought he was one of the hottest shooter, though very streaky last year. I think Hakeem Hart is going to be your leading scorer, and I also think he will have the most points for a Terp since Cowan.
Wow, okay. Very bold. Yeah,
the Cowan part is bold. That's we'll see.
I'm not saying he's going to do more than Cowan. We haven't had very many scorers since fair. Cowan. Like, what, I don't know the number off the top of my head, but it can't be high. Like,
that's fair. I'll go the opposite side of the floor. I think Merrill will end up finishing top 4 in the Big Ten in steals per game. You know, a guy like Ian Martinez, again, like I mentioned, you know, I think he's he's obviously more natural fit at the two. Jameer Young, I think he's a guy that can kind of help Merrill in that regard. And then Akeem Hart, obviously, last year he was a beast on the defensive end. I think he had, 5 games of at least 3 steals or more. I think he'll be able to kind of pick up right where Maryland defense left off, and I think Willard's kind of hoping the defense will kind of help set the tone early on in the season. Hard to look much further than Akeem Hart, so we'll see. But I have a feeling that Maryland can get close to that.
All right, I was having a hard time coming up with a hot take. You guys had some pretty good ones. Ryan, yours is very bold.
I've been real wrong before, everyone.
Bold and specific.
Eric Ayala was going to have the highest scoring in Terps history. That was my prediction his freshman year. That went great. So do not put money on my bets.
I'll take the more obvious. I'll take the safer approach. You went specific. You went bold. I'll go safer. I'll say Julian Reese averages a double-double this year, and he's going to have to. I think for this
team
to move.
That's a great sign.
I think, I think he's going to have to, because, again, he's going to play in a lot of minutes down low. He's got to have to gobble up rebounds left and right. And if really Willard is looking to push the ball and work the ball down low, then he should just naturally score 10 points a game or more. And I think he needs to do that to keep him here long-term as well. So
over.
What's that?
Over under 3 triple-doubles.
Triple-doubles? Under. Under 30. Yeah, no. But I think he averages a double-double in points and rebounds.
I would love to get back to what the Gary Williams staple, the passing out of the post, so he could easily have 10 assists.
Inside out.
Really get back to that inside out.
I would love it. I would absolutely love it, man. It's going to be fun.
It'll never happen. That's not how basketball works anymore.
Yeah.
But it would be great.
We don't know what to expect with this team. It's just so hard to predict because it's a whole different style. It's a whole different philosophy. It's going to be a fun year to be a Terp fan regardless. You know what I mean? Like, if you're going into the season with really high expectations, then, yeah, you're probably going to have a miserable year. But if you're going in to just embrace the change, right? Looking forward to the future and seeing the steps and seeing the progress. If that's your mindset, then this should be a fun year. With that said, I wanted to ask you guys, do you think that this team can carry themselves to an NCAA bid this season, or do you think it's more the NIT route?
If they can get, I think one would give them a shot. I think if they can get two of the marquee non-conference games, you know, obviously the UCLA, Tennessee is going to be a really tough one, I think. And then they have the invitational in late November, I believe. If they can get two big signature wins in non-conference, and then possibly, you know, go 500 or maybe a game or two under 500, I think they have a shot. I don't think they will make the tournament, but I do think Maryland will end up being a bubble team this year.
Are you disappointed in Willard's first season if they don't make the tournament?
I don't think disappointed would be the word, because I would acknowledge it. You know, it's year one.
Right.
And again, I think one of the issues, and I think a big reason why Willard's saying we need time and that we won't catch our groove until late in the season, is because of just how many new guys there are coming from different coaching staffs and different schools. All coming together, trying to learn. And again, same first year for the new staff. So I don't know that I'd be disappointed, but I think it would definitely be much more of a jolt if he made it than if he didn't. But I wouldn't definitely look at Willard and say, oh no, he was a bad hire if he didn't make it. So okay. I would understand it. I would understand it at this point.
Ryan, where are you at with it?
Look, I'm not going to guarantee anything, but what I can tell you is the reason it's more fun to be a fan of the Gary Williams run and gun, full court defense, traps, is because it's a high variance thing. The shooting, high variance thing. Were we better than all those Duke teams that we beat? No. Were we better than all those UNC teams we beat? No. But it's a high variance level of basketball. You get the steals, you get the wide open looks, and you can beat teams you shouldn't beat. And so I think that gives us a shot, like Ahmed saying, of stealing these out-of-conference games that I think Tennessee's way better than us. But do I think that we are just done and not can't win? Not if he plays the way he says he's going to play. So that's what my whole goal for this year is that. I want this to not have all been bullshit. I was told by Randy Edsall that Maryland was his dream job, and I knew that was bullshit from the minute it came out of his lips. So maybe this is all bullshit. We've been being sold a package of goods, but maybe it's not. So as long as I see them, the running guns, the traps, the fun, shooting, I'll be okay with a bubble team. I'll even be okay, I guess, with NIT as long as that's true. Because it's going to give us those one or two wins that is going to make it an exciting year. It's going to give you those one or two games. We've lost five in a row, but we beat a top 15 team. So that's what I want to look for. I want to look for the promise and the consistency that he's actually going to do what he said.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, with both of you, actually. So, Ahmed, I'm with you that I don't think it's tournament or bust. And I'm there with you, Ryan, on the fact that I want to see that you follow through with the change that you promised, right? And I want to see that the product on the field looks good. And it doesn't look like what it's been for the past 10 years, and that there is change and that we are trending in the right direction.
Inbounds plays, that'd be good.
Yeah. development. It was just that high energy, high efficient basketball, you know, the press, like you said, the press getting the ball
defending an inbounder.
Yeah,
that'd be great.
It was basic fundamental basketball. Getting back to that, I think for me would be a successful year. I'm not setting the bar on an NCAA tournament or bust. That's just not what I expect of this team in this year. And again, they're playing in a tough conference. You know, the Big Ten is a tough basketball conference. And it's going to take Kevin Willard a little bit of time to get adjusted to that and the pace of game and just all of it.
And one step further, they make the NCAA tournament and lose the first game. Great. That's a completely successful season. I don't care whether they win a single game. I don't know whether they win a minute if they make the NCAA tournament. That 100%,
right.
You can't argue that wasn't a successful season on year one. You can't. Yeah, you can worry about wins later.
Well, it's an exciting time of year, man. Again, the Terps football squad locking up bowl eligibility with a chance to win 7 this coming weekend. 4 days from now, you're tipping off the basketball season. This is where things really start to get ramped up. So the shows are going to start to get ramped up. We're going to start talking both a mix, football and basketball. So make sure you're tuning in every week. If you haven't had a chance yet, make sure you're following us on all of our social media platforms. You can follow us at Shell and Tell Pod on pretty much everything. Twitter, you can follow us at Shell and Tell Pod. You can follow Ryan at Terps B Espert. Follow me at Fred BLBS. You can follow Ahmed at Kafir the Turtle. And make sure you're subscribed and following Inside Black and Gold. Ryan, sign us off.
Hey, it's exciting time of year. We have not given up on the football team. It's not wait till basketball time. That's great around these parts. We also have the Lady Terps looking to completely rebuild their process and continue their dominance across the Big Ten. I think they're expected to project lower than they've ever been in the Big Ten, but I think she'll get it all together. Guys, let's get out there. Well, we can't get out there. They're not letting us in, but maybe we'll all go see Niagara game together. let's watch. Let's root for these Terps. Let's stay healthy, get a big win, shock the nation, and get us one of them Florida Bowls. Until next time, here's the wishing. All is well under the shell.